Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You're about to listen to an interview which our socios enjoyed in full 12 months ago. If you'd like to listen to these exclusive monthly big interviews on the day that they're released, it's time to join us. That means supporting us. It means the price of a pint per month. Go to Patreon, patreon.com/GrahamHunter. Go now, join and become a socio. That means you'll get that extra big interview every month. And you'll also unlock our entire archive straight away. All for £2.99 a month. It's the best deal in town, baby. And we need you. Welcome to the big interview. I'm Graham Hunter. Welcome to the show. I went back to Derby County's training ground recently to speak to Shay Given. He's part of Frank Lampard's coaching staff, along with Jody Morris. And you can all see for yourselves that things are going well. A talented trio, a talented team. I first met Shay behind the scenes at Michael Carrick's testimonial at Old Trafford, liked him. And the fact that he was a top-class goalkeeper for so many years for several different clubs and also played elite international football for Ireland, allied to the fact that he's got an interesting life, is a characterful, funny, articulate man, meant big interview guest. Not on the same subject exactly, but we have beautiful sponsors. Bet365 have sent this question in for you. Mm-hmm. And it's an easy one, a really easy one. What's the toughest or worst part of being a goalkeeper?
The toughest or worst part? It's probably the loneliness of it, of when you make a mistake. The loneliness of just you there on your own and thinking, you know, I should have saved that or whatever. You've let your team down. We talk about the fans before. You feel like you've, well, this is me personally, you feel like you've let the fans down, the club down, the owners. You feel like you're responsible, you know, to what's just happened, you know. And the thing is, the early part of my career, I struggled with dealing with mistakes, and I took it on board myself to get a sports psychologist to help me with that. But, you know, it is a lonely position. And then you might not touch the ball for another 20 minutes after that, because that's just the position you're in. Whereas if you, I don't know, it always gets me as the commentators, for example, would say, you know, striker's gone through and he's missed a chance, or a cross come in and his toe poked it wide. And the natural reply from a commentator, most commentators, oh, he was unlucky there, he'll get the next one. Whereas if you flip it to the other side, a goalkeeper is like, if it goes through your hands or through your legs, whatever, it's like, what the hell's he doing there? I mean, how's he not stopped that? My granny would have saved that. You know, it's just, it's black or white with the keeper. It's, you save it. Yeah, you're probably expected, a lot of the commentators, well, you're expected to save it, and if you don't, it's like, you know, what the hell is he doing? Whereas the other side of the pitch is like, he's expected to score, or he'll get the next one, he was unlucky. You know, it's just a different outlook on it, vocabulary, yeah.
David Priest has been in this series, and David didn't sort of play at your level, but analytically, he talks really well and educates all of us about the art of goalkeeping. And that idea about vocabulary, I don't know why do you think it is that through time immemorial, the goalkeeper has, when there's a problem situation or an error, it's kind of portrayed as a victim or somebody to be beaten, whereas the striker is let off and there'll be gold around the corner, there'll be jam tomorrow for the striker. Why is that idea built up and that vocabulary built
up? I don't know if it's a mentality that is, even go back to your school days, people would say, oh, we pick the team and then the last two standing, oh, you two go in goals.
I don't know if there's a I don't know, a mentality that, you know, the keepers maybe the less talented than the rest of them. But I used to be the top goal scorer in my school. I used to love playing up front. You know, I was kind of cross between playing out the fielder and goals. My dad said I should be a goalkeeper. He was a goalkeeper and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I think, you know, people maybe later in life even still think that maybe we're not as talented as the outfield players. But you look at Ederson now, you look at Kepa at Chelsea, you look at the amount of money he's played, that much would David De Gea be worth now? You know, Alisson's gone for $67 million to Liverpool. You look at the prices that are getting paid for. Suddenly, in my opinion, there's been literally a wake-up call to all managers, all owners, and all people around the world that, do you know what? Yes, the striker might be the most important, but I'll tell you what, the second most important was the goalkeeper. Because if you've got someone keeping them out, and especially now when you look at the styles of play, that, for example, Man City with Ederson, how Pep Guardiola wants to set his team up, and you know, one of his most important players and his whole team, and you know, you talk about Aguero and all these flair players and Sterling and all these guys, but one of the main people in all his whole system is the goalkeeper. And that is critical. And what they paid for him now, you could say, is a bargain. They paid $35 million for him because he's been so good and so good with the ball at his feet as well. He literally is an 11th outfield player when they have the ball. And it's just remarkable, I feel, that it's taken so long for people to realise that.
Well, turning that around, I'm so glad you've taken
I went in a bit of a rant there, didn't I?
No, because that's the central part of what we wanted to talk to you about, because before we talk about breaking keepers down, whether you talk about De Gea or Alisson or Ederson, the British media predominantly say that the top three goalkeepers in the world are here. I think Neuer was, I think because of age and injury, that time's probably gone. I know that a lot of people here don't watch La Liga quite as much as they used to when it was on Sky, or as much as I do, because I live there. But if I look at Courtois, who's just come back, Kehler, who won three straight Champions League, Marc-Andre Ter Stegen, who's a different kind of goalkeeper in that he's probably dimensioned like you, whereas, you know, Ederson, Courtois are giants of men.
Well, Ederson's not, I would disagree with Ederson's not, but Courtois for sure, yeah.
Courtois is.
Neuer, for sure.
Neuer was. And also, I'd go for, and De Gea's height is gigantic, but like Mark has terrific feet. He's a sweeper, not just a sweeper keeper, he is a sweeper. And if you keep going down the leagues and you look at David Soria or Neto at Valencia, and you add just those two countries without even going back to where Leno came from, and I've yet to learn enough about Leno, but. You know, it'd be my contention that we're living in the golden age of goalkeeping for any number of reasons. The number of candidates you can argue about how do you compose a top five around Europe, I don't mind the world, is brutally hard. You can say, well, my team wants to play at this, therefore he's better than him because of our brand of football. Fine, okay. Who are the guys that are that have your preference for whatever reason you want to say? And two, why is it that we've come to this golden? What has the level of goalkeepers across a broad spectrum gone up?
I think the position has changed over the years, and especially in recent years. And maybe that's why maybe the goalkeepers are more in the spotlight to a certain degree, because the transfer fees for one, you know, 60, 70 million for a goalkeeper. Now, When would it, I don't know, even I know the transfer fee's gone mad probably in the last 4 or 5 years, but even I don't know, 10 years ago, if you spent £6 or £7 million on a goalkeeper, you'd be like, oh God, that's a crazy amount of money to spend on a goalkeeper. Like, are you sure we don't need another striker? Do you know what I mean? We'll get someone in a free or something in goals. But I think, as I said, I've already said, but there's a realisation that this is a hugely important position for the whole team. And the way we want to play, I mean, I'll go back to Man City, the way they want to play, you know, Liverpool, Klopp as well, you could argue. I mean, I'm talking about Premier League clubs because, as you say, I don't see. I mean, I know there's All Black as well at Atletico. You didn't mention who's a phenomenal goalkeeper.
He might be my number one right
now. Yeah, yeah.
In what I would consider pure goalkeeping, the art of stopping goals.
Yeah.
When it comes to playing with the feet, then it's a broader discussion. I would need your input. That's to be number one.
Yeah, everyone has a different thing. So Pep Guardiola might think the number one box you need to tick is how good is he with the ball at his feet, right? Okay, Ederson is probably for me the best maybe in the world. His composure with the ball at his feet, his thing way. Then you go, who's the best shot stopper? Now you would say maybe David De Gea, or you mentioned All Black, they could be two of the best shot stoppers. But Pep Guardiola might be sitting in his chair thinking, Yeah, they're fantastic shot stoppers, but I want them to be better with the ball at the feet. I want them to be the 11 player when we have the ball. You know, Ederson last week was playing in midfield. He had a 1-2 with Fernandinho in midfield last week, which was funny, but actually sums up how comfortable he is with the ball at his feet. And I think even, I'm not sure which Man City player this year was quoted as saying, the best passer of the ball at the football club is Ederson, which is, you think of the talent they have at Man City. So it's very difficult, I think, for any individual, even a goalkeeping expert, and I'm certainly not one of them, to sit in any room, they say who's the best goalkeeper in the world, because I think it's who's the manager, what manager at that club, and what, do you know what I mean?
How what's
like Simeone at Atletico would be like, well, I wouldn't change All Black with any keeper in the world.
There's no way he'd allow Ederson to do that. He'd never sign him.
That's what I mean.
Anathema to choose Simeone, you're right.
So, and Pep Guardiola might say, well, All Black's not good enough for me with the ball at his feet. That's, so it's difficult for anyone to be at the top of the pyramid and on every single person's eyes. And that's a good thing about football, not just goalkeepers, but everyone has a different opinion.
But when we look at, my contention, I mean, I agree with everything that you've said, but my contention would be that there's never been a time when there's such a wide range of absolute excellence. And maybe there's a simple answer, but I'm fishing for it. Full-time one-on-one training every day rather than... I remember when Hodgson was coming through with Gorham at Rangers in Scotland, and one-on-one goalkeeper training was not necessarily the most common thing that existed, but he was regarded as, you know, a world guru, like Steadman and knee surgeon or whatever. And now every single club will dedicate time to that. It's part of the central part of the work you do here at Derby. Yeah. You know, is one-on-one individual training every day the reason for it? Is it footballers saying, well, there's more to my job as a goalkeeper, therefore I have to expand my skills? Do you have a feeling for why the level is so high? Across the industry, I mean.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, I think that obviously helps. If you've got a coach coaching you every single day, you know, I started my career at Glasgow Celtic and we had Joe Corrigan, who came in on a Thursday.
Ex-Manchester City.
Yeah, ex-Manchester City goalkeeper came in on a Thursday and coached the keepers for one day a week. So if you take one day a week now till we're in here 7 days a week, then naturally they're going to improve, get better. And also, I think the game's moved on, and then the actual position of being a goalkeeper has moved on. You know, we used to get the ball and you'd be told to kick it down as far down the pitch as you can get it away from our goal type thing, you know. And if anybody looks to get the ball off you, push them up the pitch. You know, I used to get some horrendous back passes and I would see names and numbers going the other way. There'd be no one giving me any option to show for it. And now you see, like, the likes of most teams, and even here at Derby, we encourage to play from the back. So when the keeper gets it, he should have, you know, three, four, maybe five options where to play the ball. And I think that's good, the way the game's moved on.
When the names and numbers are running away from you, we don't need to name them. But because they were... Because some footballers don't show.
You know, no.
I'm not having anything to do with that.
Yeah.
Or a coach says, never do that. Never pass it along, you know, never take a risk. What was it in that situation? The culture was still get it long. Players would hide from the responsibility on a bumpy pitch.
Probably the whole coaching's moved on. Not just the goalkeeping coach, but the whole game's moved on so much now that, you know, in a sense, you know, people like Pep Guardiola and the likes have to take the credit for that, because they've revolutionised the whole game of keeping possession. And you know, we do studies here, you know, analysts here and stuff about, you know, at times we kick the ball long sometimes because there's no options. The opposition have pressed really high. We can't get out. We've kicked the ball. And even maybe we 5 minutes to go, we're leading the game. We think, let's just kick it long, get up the pitch and squeeze it. But then we've put a stopwatch on the thing, and within 9-10 seconds, the ball's back in our box.
It's back.
You know, and it's mad, but you think, well, if we had thrown it to the centre half and he had played it there, number six, and maybe back to the keeper and out the other side, it would be a lot longer if we can keep the ball. And it's just getting that mentality.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
But from when you grew up, you're a lot younger than me, but when you grew up, yeah. it's a huge change of mentality.
Isn't massive.
Because you put your finger on it, and it's really odd, because Neil and I were talking about this recently, as I was with a filmmaking partner, Duncan, who made Take the Ball, Pass the Ball. Like, that it isn't that long ago that an advantage, an opportunity, was to have the ball long.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not talking about, you know, Jack Charlton.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about Pomo, but I am talking about, like, when I began at Bustle to see Frank Rijkaard, first of all, and Pep Guardiola reinstitute Cruyff principles about, if we have a free kick or a corner, put it down and take it to your nearest teammate.
Mm.
It isn't about how long can you put it, or can you put the centre half under position. The majority of the times, we've got the ball, put it down, take it. Put it down, take it before the other team find it out.
Yeah.
If the other team is asleep. And at the start of it, you're like, well, why, you've wasted a free kick?
Yeah, that's right.
You've wasted a minute. Well, you've not gained any. You're going back. But they've still got the ball.
Yeah.
Isn't that long ago that we were all being, I can't speak for you, the broad football public was being totally re-educated by that concept. And now we all live and breathe it, and we talk about playing out from the back.
Yeah, even now at Derby, that we're here this year, obviously, and Gary Rout was here last year, and it's no slant on what he did, but he was quite direct last year, wouldn't play out from the back, and we've tried to change a lot. And at times the centre half would come back to the goalkeeper, and there'd be a few moans and groans around the crowd, because thinking, why aren't we getting the ball forward? Yeah. But, you know, that comes from different managers, different styles of play, and not educating the Derby fans because they don't know what they're doing. It's just because last year's style was the opposite of that. We're just trying to, you know, even the gaffer, sometimes after games, has to inform them a little bit. That's how we want to play. Try and keep possession. And inevitably, you'll have more of the ball. You'll have more chances at the other end.
And it's a change of culture, Shahid. Yeah. In any walk of life, you can't change culture without people objecting or being uncomfortable with it. And it is not Derby fans, it is a re-education, I think. Re-education of certain players.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So, when the ball was at your feet, you know, in any of your club situations, were you comfortable playing it? Did you?
I enjoyed playing it, actually. I much preferred playing, but different. I was sort of at the end of when it was kind of norm to play it. I was kind of, it was just coming into that when I was sort of coming out, if I'm being honest, and I would love to play now. You know, I hated just kicking the ball on and what have you. And one, because my groins after games used to be hanging, because you just had to kick it as far as you could, and you'd be ice packs in your groins and your thighs, basically. And now it's just, because I was quite composed when I played as well. Once I crossed the white line, you know, I can be quite frantic at times, but once I crossed the white line, that was my sort of, I felt at ease with myself on the pitch, and I could see things before they even happened. I could just, you know, and I just feel that if I was playing now in the modern game, I would love it. Like, I would love, you know, the Ederson position to play and be a sweeper and stuff. I used to be a sweeper. People used to say I'm really quick off my line and stuff, but I'd be quick off my line just to clear up the pitch again. Mm. Whereas if my defenders at the time would be, like, making angles and stuff,
what a frustration.
Then I would just be laying it off to them. It would be so simple, you know. But that's the way the game's moved on. And I'm not saying, it was terrible back then and it's brilliant now, but it's just different times of the game.
Bet365 sent us another one. Again, I think it's reasonably simple for you, but not for us, because every footballer has different criteria about what they do well. So if I asked you to name your greatest ever save, not only what would it be, but why would you choose it?
Well, it's difficult. I'm not a great person of saying I was brilliant at this and that was an amazing save.
This is off the record. Nobody's listening.
Turn the mic off.
And me, yeah. That's it all.
Because I don't know. I mean, probably the one that stands out is Sunderland v Newcastle. So I was at the Stadium of Light and I made a save up to my left off Kevin Phillips. And it was, you know, obviously you can imagine the Derby games up there used to be phenomenal and the atmosphere. And, you know, we used to get bussed in, and even the away fans get bussed in. We sort of police escorts and stuff. And you'd imagine the reception you get going into the stadium and all that stuff. And I loved all that. I was like, the bigger the game for me, the better. I was like, bring it on. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? That's the sort of mentality I had. I was like, come on. And in that game, that's one of the saves, but I had about, I can't remember how many, I had a lot of big saves in that game, but that was the best save that I made in that game. And there was other great saves, but it made like...
Technically, reaction?
No, it was
pressure.
A shot just from the edge of the box, and he whipped it, and I've just literally gone full length to my left, step and dive right up to the top, his right hand corner, my left hand corner, my left, and I just got a finger to it. And it was one of them one saves you make, and you literally landed a yard outside the post or something, and it was like, I went thinking I'm probably got no chance of saving it. I say to the lads even now every day, you know, you can't save with your eyes, and that means, you know, you don't look at it on the internet. You surprise yourself sometimes. You someone, a coach told me when I was 15, you can never save a shot with your eyes. You know, you see keepers and he's standing and hits the net. And Bobby Robson used to say that to me. He goes, son, I'm 72. I can stand and watch the ball going in the net. I want you to die for it. And that stuck with me, all that, you know, all that stuff over the years. Like, but that was one of them saves. I've literally flew as far as humanly possible. And I got the end of my finger on my left hand to it. And I just got enough of the ball to go around the post.
Do you golf?
I do, yeah.
Right, well, I'm not a particularly good golfer, so probably your shots are...
Not that often.
When you hit one, you know, yeah, how you don't feel it?
Yeah, yeah.
When you click,
yeah,
it, whatever,
right, yeah,
you
know,
when you're top corner, when you we always talk about fingertips,
yeah,
saves. Do you feel it?
No, you don't feel nothing. I mean, I remember, I think, rolling over and getting up, and I sort of give it a bit of a nod. I think it was Kevin Phillips, and I just give it a bit of a nod. Is that, like, as if to say, is that the best you got? Like, with an arrogance and a sort of, like... Right, and he at that stage, because he couldn't hit any better, he was thinking, my God, we're not scoring today. It was one of them days that I think some coach said to me once, you could have saved water today. You were just saving everything. You know, you could have caught water, because it was just you get days like that as a goalkeeper. Of course you do. You get days you're unbeatable, and that save. And the reason I say that save is because I think it made the top 10 saves of Premier League history or something, and that probably why it was in my head stuck out as well. But it was the derby. It was all that kept a clean sheet. It was a lot to it, you know. It was good.
I have to sort of begin to wrap up,
yeah,
simply because international transport.
You're a busy man.
Otherwise, you'd be pinning that seat for another 4 or 5 hours, and you think I'm joking. So I want to maybe wind up by giving you a choice. Either llamas, guys come into Eta, Tehran, or beating Barcelona at St James's. Llamas, I think, might have been a Christmas present at one stage for Big Duncan. or bought by Big Duncan. Tehran must have been one of the most sort of nerve-wracking moments of your life.
Yeah.
Guys come into it, a friend of mine and a guest on this series, one of the most upsetting moments of your sporting,
yeah,
life.
Possibly, yeah.
Barcelona.
Yeah.
Thumping them.
Yeah.
Play out on this with the choice of anecdote or memory or feeling that bring back.
Well, some good ones there and some bad ones. I probably have to say Tehran, because growing up in Ireland, we mentioned Ireland and Donegal and Lifford, you know, growing up and sort of growing up being a fan of being the Jack Charlton here and getting the World Cups and European Championships and stuff. And then to win a playoff in Iran, Tehran, it was just like, once that final whistle went, because they scored in the 90th minute or something, and if they had got an hour one, you know, was going to extra time, and there was 100,000 male population in the stadium that night, it was carnage. You can imagine the atmosphere. There was all sorts going off.
That's my point. What's that like, flying there, arriving?
Yeah.
The country. I mean, as far and as strange possibly as you've seen in your country.
Yeah, the worst I had was that we went in there a couple of days before, and Mick went to their time straight away. So, like, later at different clubs have played in Europe and Champions League and what have you, and we stuck to the local time. No, we stuck to the English time, sorry. So we went into, I don't know, just for example, if Barcelona's an hour ahead or whatever, we actually stuck to UK time. But this was like a 4 or 5 hour swing. So Mick McCarthy went into their time straight away, and the night before a game, I couldn't sleep. I was up at like 4 or 5 in the morning. I had to go and get the physio to try and get a sleeping tablet, and we're due to go for a walk that morning at 10. Mick told the manager, well, Shay's not got to sleep till 5 o'clock or something, so sort of sacked the walk off or whatever and what have you. But I think just the whole importance of that game, because growing up as a fan and watching the Irish teams, and then when they win the games in the World Cups, celebrating in the local town, Lifford, like hanging out of the cars with the flags and the scarves and the beepings of the horns and all, and then to be actually playing now as the best goalkeeper in Ireland, and the final whistle going off in Tehran, they go, oh my God, now I'm going to World Cup finals. As the man, I used to be diving around the garden like Paddy Bonner, pretending I was Paddy Bonner as a fan, and now, you know, there's probably kids in Ireland thinking they're Shay Given, which is even me sitting here now saying that sounds a bit surreal, but that's the realisation of it. And just that realisation when the final also went, we were actually going to Japan and Korea to play for Ireland in the World Cup finals. That was, there's no better feeling than
were
that.
Were the people chanting "Boys in Green" behind the goal? Were there little pockets of fans?
There was a pocket of fans, but it was literally, I think it was, I don't know, I can't remember exactly, but 100 people or something. It was
lost in 100,000
people. Yeah,
Iranians.
Yeah, it was crazy, and they were in the stadium 5 hours before the game or something. And we got off the bus, and there's concrete and fruit and oranges and things, and warming up before the game. I mentioned
when you say that throne, are you talking about throne or what? Or
what was concrete and fruit?
No, like quite a bits of the stadium. It was like an old-fashioned stadium all made of concrete, so they must have been pulling bits of the concrete off the seats and all and chucking at us. And then I was warming up and there was these like sort of grenade things. Not a grenade, it was like when it hit the ground, it made this, like it sounded like a grenade or whatever, going back to Port Mark, some by a gun, but it was that loud. And I was stretching and it made you shake like that, and it was a good 20 yards away from me. I thought, oh, that's all right. And next one's gone away sort of 2 yards where you're sitting away from me, and it makes a hole in the ground and the dirt hit me in the face. And I'm like, that's like a little bit too close for comfort, because if I'd hit you, would have done damage, like, you know. And it was,
but I didn't know who they were screwing with. you were like, because you had a big one from Ali Dyer that day.
Yeah,
people don't remember Ali Dyer, I guess, but I know, about a billion goals.
Well, I had a big save. Talking about Kevin Phillips, I had a massive save in Dublin on the first leg. Actually, it was down to my left. The guys threw 1-on-1, and it went full length again down to my left, low, and I managed to keep it out. And had they scored an away goal, then, you know, that goal he did score in the 90th, they would have been going. And obviously, Ali Daly, you mentioned in the second leg, had a couple of saves in the second leg as well. But, you know, just as I say, the final whistle went off and it was just like, oh my goodness.
Do you know one of the things about this series? It's joy hearing other people talking about their joys.
Yeah.
It's really uplifting. And people who are listening are going to enjoy that a lot. And
I hope so.
As far as Lamas and Barca are concerned, it's going to have to be another day.
No. Actually, sorry, I'm not going to finish, but the Christmas present I got for one of the players was a heart. I don't want to mention his name, but he was...
Can I?
Well, he might not be happy. It's out there, I mean, so Alessandro Pistone.
Yeah.
We had to get these Santa Claus things, and it
was... He was overly gentle for an Italian defender.
Well, yeah, if you had any sort of... We always say play through the pain barrier as an Irishman or British Isles or whatever politically the right word is, but... If he felt anything, then he wouldn't play, or he had to be 100%. Like, and I don't think I ever played a game 100%. So
that's the thing I've encountered when I talk to footballers. The thing that they've got least tolerance for is somebody's like, "Oh, I've got a bit of
pain here." Like,
many other things can be forgiven and helped, but oh no, I think not today. You're on your own, lads.
Yeah,
the Crystal players don't get allowed.
Yeah, when my hands were freezing in that tractor all them years ago, my dad was saying, "There's nothing wrong with you. Get on, mate." Then you,
Alessandro,
that's what you do.
My kickos. Beautiful. Shake Evan.
All right, thanks, Greg.
Enjoy.
Thanks, man.
Thank you. Hopefully you enjoyed that big interview, which was first released as an exclusive to our socios 12 months ago. If you'd like to get these interviews on the first day that they're available, it's time for you to join us, to become a socio, and for only £2.99 a month, you will get an exclusive big interview, plus regular mini-documentaries, not only all ad-free, but all featuring me, and bringing you interesting, funny, and sometimes scandalous things from Spanish football. Go to patreon.com/GrahamHunter to unlock our entire archive. That means that once you join, you will have a treasure trove of interviews with funny, elite, interesting, revelatory, top-class footballers. By joining us, you will help support this independent podcast. You will help to keep us on the road, interviewing people and sending that content for your delectation. If you go to the gym, you'll be slimmer. If you've got a dog, he or she will thank you. If you've got a TV, you can turn it off and listen to this instead.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.